Hello, listeners, and welcome to another exciting episode of Standing Post with your host, Cody Starkin. This month, we speak to the first female motorbike support unit officer from the Foreign Missions Branch of the Secret Service. I talk to her about her daily duties and responsibilities in the unit and discuss her job while working under the COVID-19 pandemic. We hope everyone is still holding on strong during these trying times, and the episodes that we produce provide some respite. Now, please welcome to the show, Officer Technician Alta Gunawan. Welcome to the show, Officer Technician Gunawan. Can you please introduce yourself to the listeners?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Officer Technician Alta Lauren Gunawan, and I am the first female on the motorcade support unit for United States Secret Service.
And thank you for coming on the show. I think this is a special opportunity because we're going to definitely learn a little bit about what you do, especially during the pandemic that's going on right now around the world. But what I really want to zero in on is the fact that holding that title of being the first female motorbike officer. So I really want to dig deep into that and then kind of talk about your day to day and what you've been doing these past couple weeks.
Absolutely.
So first off, I want to discuss with you kind of what growing up was for you and where you were born and kind of where you lived prior to the Secret Service.
Yeah, so a little backstory behind me. I grew up in a small town of 400 people in Neponset, Illinois, which it's a little blip on the map. So if you blink, you might miss it. It was wonderful growing up in a small town. I got a lot of opportunities to fulfill every childhood dream, from breaking bones to being a little terror through my town, running around, just getting to be an amazing kid and seeing how kids have to grow up now where you have to always worry about things. I loved where I grew up because once the streetlights came on, I didn't have to worry about anything. I knew I had to come home. My mom knew I'd be there. And oh, trust me, if I wasn't home by the streetlights, my mom was definitely yelling out the front door, wondering where we were. So it was a great childhood.
And what did you do? What did you enjoy doing growing up? Because you're talking about breaking bones and everything like that. I was curious of like, did you play sports? Were you just generally an outdoors person?
Yeah. So what's really cool, where we grew up, it's a lot of cornfields, soybean fields. So we basically just rode our bicycles. We would play. I can't even call my town I lived in like a city. It was a little village. We would play tag around the whole town. So it was actually really fun to do that. We would just do, you know, what every normal kid would do. We'd climb trees. We would just do things probably our parents didn't really want us to do, like every good kid. It was wonderful just being able to live out my childhood like that.
So from somebody from such a small town, how do you find out about the Secret Service? I mean, you probably obviously everybody sees them on TV or through movies and things like that. But what usually what I'm learning through talking to everybody here in the Secret Service is that either they have some type of connection or it's they watch a movie or a show and they're kind of like, well, why not me? What was your story?
So for me, I've always wanted to do something that was in the government, whether it be the FBI, the CIA. I just always wanted to be in something that was federal government. And the Secret Service just spoke to me. And I actually have my aunt, who is currently a special agent with Secret Service. And talking to her, I just started to gain this appreciation for it. And finally, it was just a light bulb that clicked in my head that said, you know, just apply when it opens and see where it takes you.
And so why the uniform division?
The uniform division has such a unique protection side, and that's kind of what drew me in. And as the uniform division, they have many different units within the uniform division, which is wonderful. It's not just motors. We have canine, we have our emergency response team. So there's an array of things that if I wanted to just go do something, I could put my head down, work hard, and go to that next unit if I wanted to.
and from the, well, I guess what I call basic training or going through the initial training process, how long does that take for you from being an initial trainee going through graduation? And then how long does it take for you to be able to put in for, say, the motorbike squad?
So to go through our training, the first thing you have to do is go through what we call FLETC, which is the federal law enforcement training facility. Mm-hmm. And there's two places that we do our training at. It's in Glencoe, Georgia, and Artesia, New Mexico. I had the wonderful opportunity to go through Glencoe. You can talk to people about each facility, but I definitely lucked out where I went. I actually ended up being class of two. So myself and the other female I was with had a really unique training. Normally that training for FLETC is about 3 months. We kind of got the short end of the stick because when we were going through our training, we actually got stuck in Hurricane Matthew. So that delayed our training and we got sent home. So normal training is three months through FLETC. And then once you pass FLETC, you will actually go to the Secret Service specific training at RTC. And that's about 3 months as well.
Okay.
So roughly about 6 months total, you'll go through that extensive training.
Okay. Okay. And then once you're done with all that, what's the, you know, the next step for you as far as, because I don't know when the, I guess, when you set your sights on the motorbike squad or the motorbike team, do you get some time to think about where you want to go, or do you have your first assignment that you have to take before you can kind of opt into other groups?
Yeah. So one of the biggest things that a lot of people don't realize is we don't just guard the White House. We also have two other branches, the Foreign Missions Branch, which deals with all the embassies and whatnot. And then we also have the Vice President's Residence. Once you graduate RTC, they will place you at one of these three branches. Nine times out of 10, it's going to be at the White House, which is still a great opportunity because you get to tell everybody you work at the White House, which is awesome. It's not as cool when you say, hey, I work at Foreign Missions Branch, and people look at you like, I don't know what that is. So what they'll do is they'll place you, you'll go through your training at each branch, and then basically you'll just post stand wherever you're at. And most times when you're trying to put in for what we call a vacancy announcement for a certain unit, they will have a time limit on there. So ours is about, I believe, 2 years that you have to have on from your entry date. So at least you've already got 6 months under your belt once you actually get out there. But I highly recommend everybody go through your training at your branch, learn your unit that you're at, and then put in for something.
Yeah, because those first 2 years are pretty much just getting your feet in the water, kind of learning the customs, the cultures, and making sure that you kind of have everything, the basic knowledge under your belt.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you don't want to sit there and get a unit and not know where you're at. Anybody who's been to DC understands that DC is just very confusing. So the White House, granted, the area that you work in, you don't know much around it. But once you get out and you go to the Foreign Missions Branch, you're driving DC day in, day out. So you're understanding how traffic flows, how the pedestrians are, and all that. So, I mean, it's definitely confusing to drive out here the way they've laid it out. So I definitely like to tell people, get to know the area before you put in for something.
And so how did you find out about the and forgive me if I'm pronouncing the unit wrong, is it the motor, like, what is the proper title for the motorbike group?
So our actual unit is called the Motorcade Support Unit.
Okay.
So in short, it's called MSU. So the way I learned about it is going through RTC. They bring in each unit and we basically have a whole day of this is what this unit is, and people come in and they actually speak on it.
Okay.
And just like everyone else, probably in America, you didn't realize that the Secret Service actually has a motor unit. Whenever we have a police week here, we get a lot of people that'll come up and be like, oh, what unit do you work for? And we're like, oh, we're Secret Service. And a lot of people are just floored that we have a motor unit, which is fantastic because it's a hidden gem that no one knows about. But I learned about it through RTC because they had someone come in and actually speak about it, tell us the ins and outs of it. And right then and there, it just piqued my interest.
And so is there qualifications? Is there certain things you have to know, understand, or is there like a physical aspect to trying out or putting in for the vacancy?
Yeah, there is. You actually have to have a Class M motorcycle license, which, you know, hopefully you will if you're putting in for this.
Well, does the Secret Service help you obtain that, or do you have to have it before, or do you have to do it on your like in your own time?
Yeah, you actually have to currently hold a Class M license. The Secret Service actually won't give you one. It's a specialized training, and obviously each state is completely different. So you want to make sure that you obtain that. Just being knowledgeable about the nomenclature of a motorcycle, knowing how it works. A lot of us have ridden sport bikes, and some people have never ridden a sport bike before, or they've just ridden Harleys or some sort of Harley. So just having a normal understanding of how to operate a motorcycle, that's also key as well.
I don't mean to hold you up. Okay. I'm kind of getting off a little topic here, but it sounds like you're hitting at that you might have a sports bike or a Harley. Is that what, do you personally own a motorbike?
I do. I used to own a Kawasaki Ninja. And then I was like, you know, I need to be an adult. And so I got my first Harley was a Harley Sportster, an 883, all blacked out, beautiful. And then as of last month, I actually ended up buying a 2020 Road Glide, the Eagle Eye edition. Mm. So,
I'll leave it up to the listeners. I'm sorry, it's completely foreign to me. But I will take your word on it that I'm sure it is a very beautiful bike. But definitely. Thank you for sharing that, because I really wanted to kind of, how can I say this? It almost seems like you're going to have like a background in it or a love for it if you really go into it, because I'd find it very hard, like for someone like me to say, oh, yeah, I want to go into the motorbike group and or the MSU.
No, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people don't understand. It's this style of riding that we do is not like any other riding. Anybody could pick up a bike and ride in a straight line. Obviously, if you don't like to ride, you're not going to do it. But mm-hmm. Anybody could just pick up a bike and go in a straight line and ride a motorcycle. The type of training that we do requires you to use this bike in a way that you've never used it before. We're taking turns and going through 18-foot circles, if not smaller circles, to get around things. We're having to basically do a break and escape, which in the district, anybody who knows DC traffic, DMV traffic, when people see lights, they immediately step on their brakes. So we have to be able to react to that in a quick motion. And going through this course, they teach you all the ins and outs. Obviously, it's scary at first, but hands down, this is the best training I've ever been through.
Well, I mean, and that's kind of what the topic I want to go to next is being the first female officer with the group. Can you explain to the listeners how that felt and kind of what the things you had to go through that other females that may have tried weren't able to accomplish? Like, what can you walk us through what some of the challenges were?
Absolutely. I think one of the hardest things for me was breaking that barrier. And every day that weighed on me, it was like, this is the day you're going to do it. And so finally, I got the opportunity to put in for it. I've put in for it, the vacancies, a couple times, but I didn't have the time requirement.
Okay.
So finally, I got the first opportunity to go through it. And the first thing that they make you do is you have to do a PT test. So I passed the PT test. The next thing is what we call the assessment. Part of that assessment is actually picking up that 1,100-pound bike.
Oh, man.
You have to do it from two positions, and that is where a lot of females couldn't succeed. that bike, I'm only 5'4 and 150 pounds, but I made sure I lifted every day. I was doing squats. I was doing everything to set myself up for that because I knew it required me to do something with that motor.
Now I was going to ask because I live in the area, out here with, the embassies and everything like that. And I've seen a lot of the motorbike officers, drive by, and they have the little, and I don't know the proper name for it, but the little cab that is attached to it. Do you have to work with those too? And
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, those are what we call sidecars.
Okay.
There's only a few motor units in the United States that actually utilize sidecars. Because we do ride year round 365 in any inclement weather, we have to have something that stabilizes us for the winter seasons. So having that sidecar gives us that extra reassurance that we're going to be safe to a degree. We do have to do a training for that as well.
Okay. And so, yeah, I just wanted to, because I've seen them around and they're very unique. I think also too, the Metropolitan Police Department may have them. So that was just something new that I saw going, you know, walking around, you know, DC and seeing that with the Secret Service logo on it. So I just figured I had to ask. But getting back to the accomplishment, I mean, what was the graduation day like for you? And, you know, how does it feel to actually earn that title of being the first?
It's definitely a huge honor to be the first female. Every day it's fantastic. I see people that are walking in the street that are like, hey, I saw you on CNN or I saw you this. And, you know, it warms my heart to know that I've helped and gave people that confidence to do something that they've always wanted to do. Graduation was fantastic. I was so ecstatic. So we have to do what we call runs through our course, and you have to get 3 runs. And I hit that last run, I got done, and when they said you got it, I jumped for joy. But I wanted to be as composed as I could, so it was definitely hard, but I was very excited inside.
So congratulations. I just wanted to say that, and congratulations for achieving that.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So what is the first bike that you get? Is there different types that you can receive? I know we talked about having the sidecar, but what is the, I guess, standard issue motorbike that you would receive after training?
So us as a Secret Service, we currently utilize Harley Davidson FLH TP electric glides. So we have different years, but my first one was a 2016.
Okay. And so what does that stand apart? Like, why do you, can you speak on why that particular model is chosen?
That's the standard police model that Harley has actually made. So what's really cool is the reason we go with Harley is because it is American made. Obviously, with us being in the government, they want to support US-based companies. So maybe down the road they'll be changing. I'm not sure, but I'm just very thankful that we do get a decent bike.
Now, can you talk to the listeners about what daily life is when you're on assignment or when you're on duty as far as what your roles and responsibilities are?
So what makes our unit very unique is that we are riding year-round 365, 7 days a week in every inclement weather that you could think of. Rain, sleet, snow, you name it, we've probably ridden through it. The hardest part is not being on your own schedule. We're always on someone else's schedule. So it makes it kind of difficult to plan your day because at the drop of a hat, if someone says, hey, I need to go do this, of course we have to stop what we're doing and go do our daily task of taking them to and from where they need to go.
Okay.
So that's kind of a challenge for us some days, but it's very fun because it keeps you on your toes.
Now, when you say that, though, we're kind of specifically talking about the protectees that we have in the Secret Service. Does the motorbike group provide escort? Because I think I've seen the group, the motorcade that takes
motorcade?
Place. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to kind of give the listeners a background on who we protect, we not only protect the president of the United States, we protect the vice president and any foreign dignitaries that visit the national capital region.
Okay. And so you're part of the escort group that for the motorcade.
Yes.
Going back to what you were talking about with you 365, 7 days a week, 24 hours, and I kind of said that backwards. So right now, as of the recording, we're all kind of sheltered in place, at least the people that are non-essential workers. So in fact, I'm actually doing the podcast from my apartment right now. But for you, you still have to go out and you have to still do your patrols. You still have to do the escorting and things like that. What is the uniform division done during this pandemic to help protect you, help protect the protectees and things like that?
Yeah. So to kind of give the listeners a little background, like what we're doing. So during these hard times, obviously we're considered essential. We as the uniform division don't have a choice to telework like most other people mm-hmm. in other agencies. We have to maintain our mission of protection at all times. And because we have a zero fail mission. So if something happens, we are held accountable for it. So the good thing is that the Secret Service is actually taking care of us. We're getting the proper protective equipment. If we do have to respond to something, they're taking it very serious. So again, our biggest thing is making sure, one, that we're safe, and then that we're protecting our protectee as well. Because if we're out there and we're mingling with the general public, that's not only putting ourselves at risk, but putting someone else. And so I know for me, I don't ever want to put someone else at risk.
Well, I think I could speak on behalf of the listeners and everybody here that has been deemed non-essential. We want to thank you for, you know, putting the uniform on every day and going out there and doing your job. I know it can be tough and during uncertain times, but I think I could say from everybody, we appreciate, you know, what you're doing for the Secret Service and for the American people. So thank you.
Well, thank you guys. And we appreciate you guys as well. We understand that these are hard times, and, you know, being in this type of agency and being in the government, we all understand what it's like to be furloughed. So the one thing that I have for the listeners, if you know anybody that's struggling, make sure that you take care of them, because in the end, we're all human and we're here to help each other.
And thank you. I do still have some more questions I wanted to talk to you about, if you had still some time, about the partnerships and things like that with, I guess, Metropolitan Police Department, with the Park Police. Are you able to talk about some of the partnerships and things that you've done with the, like, with DC law enforcement and first responders?
Yeah, absolutely. So for all of us, we work hand in hand in motorcades with United States Park Police and DC Metro. So it's a really good partnership, because we all are on the same page and we all have that same mission to get our protectee from point A to point B safely. And so it's really cool, because we get the opportunity to travel, you know, throughout the DMV area with these wonderful people, and listening to their stories that they have and sharing their stories is wonderful. One of the big events that we always do is Police Week, but unfortunately, due to the pandemic this year, we are unable to do it. But hearing their stories of them doing honor flight escorts and all that stuff, you know, it warms my heart, because that's something that I would love to participate more in, is just giving back to our community and giving to people that have done things for us to make this wonderful country the way it is.
So do you feel, you know, as you continue your journey through the Secret Service, through the Uniform Division, do you find yourself playing that role as someone that will tighten those partnerships up with the Washington, D.C. law enforcement agencies and first responders?
Absolutely. I would love to continue to rise through the ranks and continue to build those partnerships with everybody, because I think it's such a huge integral part of what we do. And being able to work well with others helps everything run a lot smoother.
And I was going to also ask, from the first female motorbike officer perspective too, are you actively playing a role in trying to coach, lead, to provide information on that for other females that may want to walk into your footsteps to be able to achieve the same thing that you have?
Absolutely. We have to continue to build each other up. And there's no reason for me not to want to help somebody. If someone has a question, absolutely. I will feel free to answer your questions. I'll help you. I'll explain to you what I did to prepare myself. And I could tell you all day what I did, but everybody's different. So hopefully I can help inspire not just young girls, but also, you know, little boys as well, and build that fire for them.
I had another question just popped in my head. When you go back home, what do people say about you, or like, how do they approach you when they figured out where you ended up in life?
Well, I would like to say that I am one of a handful of people in my town that have actually left. So I'm kind of proud of that. It's wonderful. It's a great feeling because I see all of my other friends, you know, they're having kids, they're settling down, but they're still in the same town. So for me, I feel like I was one of the lucky ones that set my sights high and I achieved that goal. And so I'm extremely proud to represent my small town and, you know, give my town a good name.
And so as we're kind of wrapping up here, do you have any words for the uniform division or the Secret Service as a whole?
I mean, I think the biggest thing for me is that the Secret Service has given me so much, and I hope that everybody continues to work hard, achieve their goals, and know that anything that you want to do, just keep moving forward and keep inspiring others, because that is what this agency is all about.
Do you feel that's the same thing you'd want to say to the listeners too?
Absolutely. I mean, if you have your sights set on something, don't give up because it's hard. Put your head down, work hard, and continue to work towards that goal, because I guarantee you, you will achieve that goal if that's something that you truly want.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate you coming on the show and being able to provide, you know, your story, your journey, and discussing with listeners about, you know, the path that you chose and becoming the first female motorbike officer for the uniformed division for the Secret Service. I just want to say thank you again for being able to come on and be able to talk with us today.
Wonderful. I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Standing Post. For more information about the Secret Service or how to join, please go to www.secretservice.gov. And until next time, listeners, stay vigilant.